I could listen to him all day. That is Master Conguero, Poncho Sanchez with Afro-Cuban Fantasy. It's just a wonderful, he's just an exquisite musician. And yes, Mr. President, he's Mexican. That ought to bother you. But it's a wonderful, wonderful skill he has. And he's played with some of the greats, in fact, practically all of the greats in jazz and Latin music. He's a multi-Grammy Award winner, and he remains dedicated to promoting the music of the people and to cross-pollinating with other artists, which makes him quite special in my mind. Well, this is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're going to talk. It's very, very important. That story that I was telling you about, the five people who were found dead, the toll has gone up in the nursing home. The toll has gone up to eight people. And apparently, nobody seems to know who did what, who was in charge of doing what. But they also had to evacuate an additional 115 people. You see, this is what I mean when you are operating in a fog. And nobody knows who's supposed to do what, and there are no plans. This is what happens. One of the patients who died yesterday was 99 years old. This is inexcusable to me. Inexcusable. The company that owns the nursing home apparently has been brought up on charges before being negligent about the same thing with no air conditioning in previous situations. And they were investigated and they had to pay fines and they had to do all kinds of things to come into compliance. Now, this was a monster storm. A monster storm. And part of the planning should have included a special team going around checking on these particular institutions that are housing people and treating the elderly, making sure that everything was in place. It did not happen. It did not happen. But now the governor is in a rage. The president is in a rage. And it's going to have a lot of attention now, and there's going to be some fast moving to get things right. But this is what happens when things go slipshod for so long. That it becomes the norm. And it takes something like this to get people concerned. There are more than 300 such facilities in Florida. So you could imagine the anxiety many people are having. The industry is not particularly thought of in a good light because, they've done so many investigations on assisted living situations and nursing home situations, also in New York. And very often, they've been found to be in such violation of health codes and other kinds of codes, but the bottom line is that the people they're supposed to be caring for are just there, just like logs of wood, and at the mercy of sometimes a very uncaring staff, and certainly an uncaring ownership. All they care about is that monthly payment that comes in, and it's a hugely profitable business. But it just was so heartbreaking to watch these people. You know, they some are aware of their environment, some are not. But to think that they suffered like that in temperatures that some reporters said exceeded 90 degrees indoors. So we'll see what happens there and what happens all across Florida with all its deep, dark secrets that sometimes come to light only after a major disaster. And then you find out that the effort they make to make it look like everything was in order, no, it's not in order. Not in order at all. Well, I thought we'd talk today to continue the discussion from yesterday and your reactions to the pronouncement that the federal government, the Department of Justice specifically, will not be pursuing any charges against police officers in the massive Baltimore scandal in the death of Mr. Gray. And what we were looking for, and this is, we saw that in all of these cases, these high profile cases, we saw how uniform, pardon the pun, how uniform the cases were treated. How uniformly, I should say, sorry. How uniformly they were treated. Practically following a book. We saw the actions of the then U.S. Attorneys General, what they said they were going to do, what happened. And then we saw the outcome, which was in every single high-profile case that we identified yesterday, exactly the same result. So that's why I say to you, and I remind myself, it is important to understand that we are up against systems that spent a lot of time, people spent a lot of time putting them together so as to produce a predictable result. These cases may happen in Baltimore, as was the case with Freddie Gray. They may happen in New York City. It could happen in Ferguson, Missouri. It could happen anywhere. But we see the familiar characteristics as they pertain not only to the victims, but as they pertain also to the shooters, the police officers. We see uniform statistics about the departments that they're serving in, the nature of the town or city that they're operating in. And we're also seeing that although there is quite a lot of reason to believe that justice was not done at all in any of these cases, we see the predictable result. And we see the predictable result even when we see that one of the key changes that was made along the way was to give us a black face as the U.S. Attorney General, as the highest law enforcement official in the country. That's the position. But although the overwhelming number of victims of shootings by police were black, from predominantly black towns, we saw the same result. This says that there is something there that is causing things with events with entirely different circumstances to yield the same result in terms of justice. And the result is no justice. And they'll still tell you, well, that is just, you know, it's just happenstance. It just happened that way. You may recall the case I discussed some time ago about the city of New Orleans coming to settlements with 13 black families whose loved ones were shot and killed by police during Hurricane Katrina. One was particularly gruesome. The police officer shot and killed a man, then put him in the back seat of a car, doused him with some flammable liquid, and burned his body. Even after that, nothing happened in the way of justice. And the families were very happy. In fact, I played an excerpt in which the mother of one of the victims was praising God that this was all over. So systems are important. They're important to understand. And very often, we are up against very carefully designed systems with very strange expectations. We expect they will do the right thing. We expect that the people they report to will force them to do the right thing, that the department will do the right thing. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Systems that are very carefully designed to protect the police force, wherever it is protected. And for political reasons, you can't have a black U.S. Attorney General, I don't care who it is, compelling a different result. In fact, in Ferguson, you may remember, it was Holder himself who pronounced, even before this case, the case of Michael Brown even got to an appreciable level to give people hope that, yes, it was proceeding along the lines, he said no. The federal government cannot proceed with this case because the bar is too high. The bar is too high. And he kind of left it at that. The bar is too high. The demand at the federal level, he kind of tried to intimate, is that you have to have ironclad evidence. And you can't have any little holes at all. And I say, okay. You can't have any holes, so don't have any holes. You have all of the resources to do a competent investigation. That was the same explanation we got in the shooting death of Amadou Diallo by 6 officers. But they zeroed in on 4. The bar is too high. So are you saying you are unable to rise to the level of that bar? In Baltimore with Freddie Gray, even the state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, right out of law school, and she was determined. She made a series of bad moves. But I admired her determination to have this case proceed differently through the court system. That didn't happen. That didn't happen at all. So the question then becomes, what is justice? And should we always be prepared that we won't get any? And not getting any justice is normal. And there are reasons. And whether we like it or not, we have to live with the reasons given. We dare not challenge the system about its reasons that justice cannot be obtained. So I'm asking us to go beyond what we already know in these cases. And the emotion, which was quite palpable, and I understand it. But still, we have to ask a question and deal with the question. What is to be our role in creating a system? Is it even possible? Since it can't be obtained inside, is there something else we need to do in pursuit of justice? Because I don't think it is feasible to expect, although the system expects it, that repeated insults to the community, are to be met with pliant and quiet agreement and understanding. At some point, it is going to become a problem. In the case of Eric Holder, his tactic was to also write a report. And the report will condemn, it would, identify and then berate the people who are running these departments. And it would make a series of recommendations, lots and lots of recommendations, which will not be followed. He did it twice. He wrote a big old report. The president himself, who found himself in the very untenable position of being the front man for a very murderous law enforcement community. And at the risk of offending them and us together, he went straight down the middle, as did Holder, as did Loretta Lynch. Go straight down the middle, and you produce a report recommending further specialized training. You can cite, an additional role for supervisors within the department. But nothing is going to happen. Reports are going to be made and so forth. The president's own panel that he put together, calling for a new vision about policing. It went nowhere. They worked very hard because they thought he was earnest. They thought he was sincere about tackling the problem of police crimes. This is not misconduct. When people are killing you, it goes beyond misconduct. They did a very good report, I thought, in a very short time. Within a matter of months, about 3 months, they stretched out and really connected with people and got a lot of feedback and so forth. And they put their heart and soul into a report that they were so sure would be used to bring about changes in the nation's police departments. Wrong. Barack Obama said, oh, thank you. You did a great job. Thanks a lot. And we have no idea where that report ended up. But it certainly did not change the course of conduct within the nation's police departments. So we have an entity. Now we're talking as citizens. We have an entity that we know is in many ways completely out of control. It's doing its thing. It is violating the heck out of people's rights, left, right, and center. Its errant police officers continue to be on the force in many cases, continue to earn a living, a very good living, continue to earn a retirement wage, and they also can double up. Some police officers are on more than one police force. But the communities that they're serving are invariably communities of color. Attitudes are different. All these things have been identified before. Every single thing that we've talked about, we've talked this over and over and over again. So these factors are not unknown by anybody wanting to create change. So do we come to the conclusion after these many shootings by police, and the racial dynamic is usually the case that it's a white police officer shooting a person of color to death. What is to be the approach now, you think? What should people be doing about this problem? (888) 874-4888 is the number to call. And let's get some great discussions going about this. I want you to make a strong effort today to be clinical about it. You are a person looking at the problem clinically. So despite the fact that there are heavy emotions attached to this problem, I'm asking you, if you were to step away from it for a little bit, what are you looking at, you think? And therefore, what should people be prepared to do to engage with this problem and to attempt, if it is at all possible, a solution that might work? 888-874-4888. I'm not suggesting that there is an answer. I'm just suggesting that we think about it, and then we see, we can actually locate within that system what we're thinking about it. Ma'at, you are on the air. Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hello? Okay, yeah. I just wanted to say Hotep and greetings to the beloved family. So glad to hear you good and strong. I hope you have all the things we're used to, like power and all that good stuff.
It's coming along. Not everything is 100%, but, you know, you just got to keep moving.
Yeah, and your voice sounds so strong. I hope you got a couple of my emails, because I was certainly thinking about you and the compass. In terms of your discussion this morning, and I'm fading away, of course, here, a couple things. If you actually go to the civil rights laws, I think it's Title 18 and some of them under 241, 242 sections, the law couldn't have been better written. So this thing that they've come up with in terms of tradition or custom holds the day. And you described it very, very well in terms of holder. And let me give you another stark example. Preet Bharara, who was the U.S. attorney here and considered, a wonder kind of sorts, when it came to Romali Graham, I mean, you're supposed to have a gun when somebody's in your house pulling a gun on you. That's supposed to be your basic, law of the castle, et cetera, et cetera. He issued a press release instead of even making a show. And it doesn't have to be a show, because, like I said, if you actually start to read the laws, and we need to ask him, well, what laws are you using? Which civil rights laws? There's no way for them to say, oh, it's such a big burden, it's such a high bar. That's nonsense.
Stop there for a minute. What do you think you just said there that is itself the greatest clue about these kinds of crimes?
I'm not. It might be because, like I said, I've been up a long while.
Okay, I'm trying to get to the fact that when we deal with these crimes, there seems to be a whole different body of law. And it's called civil rights. We seldom see, in fact, I don't know of any police officer, except some police officer who murdered his wife. When was the last time you heard of a police officer being charged with murder?
Yeah, that's part of the problem.
Why is it?
Well, one of the solutions I suggested at one point, and I was with a group of journalists and aspiring journalists, brothers and sisters, and we were, there's incident after incident, death after death, and we were talking about it and analyze it, and I said, well, you need to have black people in black communities, and his sister spoke up for some reason. She didn't think it was a good idea, or maybe she didn't think that it was a feasible idea, But until you get people in who have some kinship and familiarity and don't go outside of the community when their shift is over, that is, to me, seems to be a real key. How we would get there is a whole nother question. But that should at least be put into the mix, because you have these white folks who are delusional, thinking of themselves as white folks. And by the way, thank you, Utrice. I just recently got the 2-volume set with Perry's foreword, The Invention of the White Race. I'm so excited.
Great.
Well, you made me aware of that.
thank you for getting us started today, but that's the question. That is a systemic question. Every time that we have encountered this particular dynamic, we expect to be dealing with civil rights violations, not murder, not homicide. How is this effective, David, from Brooklyn? David?
Hello, yes. I like to get right to the point, as you probably have noticed when I've called you before. What we're dealing with here is what you asked for today is an analysis of the system. And what we have to do is get to that immediately. This system is designed to do exactly what it is doing. It is designed, it's a capitalist system, the most effective capitalist system in the world, and it has a system ever since the time of the rebellion in Virginia to keep people in check. And part of that system, like keeping people in check by giving the law enforcement people the right to do the things that they have been doing since that time, is part of the system. So as long as you have a system that is not a democracy, it's a plutocracy, with some oligarchs at the head, then the people who are serving the system, regardless of what color they are, in colonial times in certain countries, they had a comprador class of people who served the interests of those who rule. People here don't understand that this is not a democracy. It's just masquerading as a democracy. And the idea is to keep those in charge, the plutocrats at the top and oligarchs, rather, in charge and maintaining a system. And part of this system, was just mentioned with Theodore Allen's book, or my friend Jeff Perry, is keeping people in check. And white supremacy is at the top of the list of things. There's nothing that will change in the system as long as the system is in effect. It goes along with capitalism in this country to maintain a white supremacy system and giving people the right to, in certain positions to carry out extrajudicial assassinations of people of color. It just goes with the system.
So in this scenario that you just laid out, are you saying that, I don't want to say what you're saying. I'm asking, is it possible to obtain justice with the scenario as you have just laid it out? Is it possible to even consider?
Excellent question. Justice under this system, of capitalism and imperialism and racism that's all over the world is an impossibility. So if you think that you're going to get justice under this system, that is a goal that cannot be reached. That is absolutely, positively impossible. The system won't allow that to happen. There's no justice in capitalism, imperialism. How are you going to have capitalism, imperialism, which has an idea to serve the interests and the pocketbooks of those people who are running the system, that is the oligarchs and plutocrats, and doing justice? There's no justice in this. And what's happening with these extrajudicial killings that are carried out by the police, militias, individuals, and get away with it right and left? I mean, there's, you know, it's the same as lynching. Nobody's ever prosecuted during the time of open-air lynchings and whatnot. The point is the system is designed to do certain things, and those people who carry those things out, like lower-level people like police, are serving the interests of those who rule. You see, the masses of people, for example, with this type of system we have of white supremacy racism, many of them support the people who are oppressing them. Most white people don't understand that what the real goal is. They don't have any animus towards those billionaires and oligarchs who are talking about them. They're worrying about black folks and Mexicans, Latino people, and that sort of thing. They don't understand the system. You don't expect the people who run the system, run the schools, run the media, to give the information about what's really going on. They don't do that. They have people fighting against each other. They give a license to policemen to shoot black people anytime they want to do it. And no matter what you say, they're not going to change. And the point is, occasionally you have an uprising, a demonstration or whatnot. They can tolerate that for a little while. And occasionally they'll even throw you a bone, a law or something, or some kind of thing to make you think you have something. But the system stays in place. And that's what they want, to keep the system in place. And when they see it as an opportunity, whatever they gave you, they just take it back.
David, you put a lot on the table for our consideration.
If people
want to
know what's going on, they must understand the system and do the proper analysis.
You put a lot on the table for consideration. Let's hear people react to what you say. Chris from West Palm Beach, you're on the air. Hello, Chris. Okay, Allison from White Plains, you're on the air.
Yes, I want to say that, okay, I could concur with what David just said. He just gave us a history lesson on the systems. However, we must remember there's the Dred Scott decision still on the books. A lot of our folks don't even know about it. A lot of them never heard about it. On the other hand, the onus falls on us. Naeem, whom you spoke to yesterday, and I think that's his name, he hit the nail on the head, saying we as a people need to get our act together. That's the biggest thing. The onus falls on us. 500 years we've been in this situation. We need to get our act together.
If we get our act together, how would that change the relationship between the law enforcement and the experiences that we see way too often? What dynamic would change here?
Okay. I've been going over some methods. I have a little group that I'm with. And, you know, we have certain things on our books, so to speak. I'm going to be like Trump in this sense, not that I follow him. But, you know, you don't put out your business, okay? There are regulations and rules that we need to follow. There are things we need to do for ourselves. We got a whole lot of straightening out to do. We need a good colon cleaning, we as a people. We definitely need a clean house. We can't invite anybody into a filthy house when our house is dirty. We got to get it together.
We got a lot of things to do. It's what you're saying is quite serious.
It is.
But
it's very
just
serious.
The way you put it. That's all.
Although we do, we need a thorough colon cleaning, a detoxification and everything. We have to get our act together. Our heads are not in the right place. We want to be like everybody else. And when it comes to this justice, it's not justice, it's just us. So, you know, I don't want to take up everybody else's position
on
this.
Thank you so much for your contribution today.
Okay.
I really appreciate
it. Take care.
Khalil from Baltimore, you're on the air. Khalil? Everybody is so slow on the draw today. What's going on? You're on the air, Khalil. Last call. Joe from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. How are you today? Good afternoon.
Okay, Joe. How are you?
Okay, thanks. I've been listening to the comments from the PRN family. Of course, everyone has their perspective. A lot of them are very, very astute. But I would say that if people are going to live within this country, I would think that they should perhaps be unified and directed in the things that they champion for, what they ask for. Specifically speaking, if I was a leader, I would try to have my organization petition the nation to pass a federal civilian complaint review board with prosecutorial powers and subpoena powers to be able to subpoena people and levy fines for noncompliance. And the members would be elected on a regional basis. When you go to vote for your mayor, you would have a vote for your regional federal civilian complaint review board member.
But, you know, I don't want to discourage you here. I appreciate the way you're thinking, but the question at hand is, and I'll rephrase it, how would what you're recommending now change the power dynamic between law enforcement and communities?
Let's take Freddie Gray. In the Freddie Gray case, this would remove the ability to try Freddie Gray from the hands of the local police environment. Once it's on a federal level, there will be certain federal laws that can handle this type of case. All cases would go to this bureau. And that would limit the amount of manipulation that can occur in the protection of the establishment in the area that you work. The police.
But you and any other private citizen won't be trying the case under federal law.
Well, we would be electing the people who would be. They would not be appointed. They would be elected. And as a regional board member, the cases of, like, Freddie Gray would go to this individual, and he would be responsible for collecting the information and submitting it on an open letter, on an open level. Everyone can see the information that's amassed, and they will be able to submit this to the federal board to see if civil rights were violated, if this was a criminal offense. I mean, when you have skilled police officers who shoot somebody because they're holding their phone, that in itself is questionable. And I think that if everyone cannot really think of being a police officer to serve the public who pays their paycheck, then you have to realize that perhaps they should go on to another occupation. So the ultimate dispensation of this of instances like Freddie Gray would be decided perhaps in a more just manner.
However, what you are suggesting, I don't know if you realize it, you have two systems of justice just the same. You will have laws that pertain to killings of African Americans and Latinos and people of color, and you would in fact will be unconstitutional in the way you're applying the law. Why should a special set of laws apply when the victim of a crime is African American or Latino, and the police are accused of killing a person. Why can't one set of laws apply to everybody?
Perhaps they should, and perhaps they could. However, I don't really think it would be unconstitutional for a specific type of crime to go to a specific bureau for investigation. I think that these laws do exist now. It's just that they never reached to the point of prosecution. I just say that the laws themselves can remain the same as long as they're enforced. And with a Federal Civilian Complaint Review Board that has subpoena and prosecutorial powers, they would be able to amass the information and, as a group, in front of the whole country, be able to put down this information so that the police can be more protected. If they are really put in danger and they are scared for their lives, well, then let that information come out. But if there are other people who, you know, I keep remembering, just as a side thought, that in the United States Senate, there was a senator from West Virginia. His name was Senator Byrd. And he was declared avowed Ku Klux Klan member. And everyone liked him a lot. He was retired from the Senate with no problem whatsoever. So the idea of the disenfranchisement, unfair treatment of people of color, of the poor, of many different types of castes and classes of people in this country, it's not uncommon. And I'm just saying that with the laws right now, if we remove the ability to manipulate these types of instances from the local police, the local DA, to a federal level where everyone can double check to make sure that the laws are adhered to, I think that that will reduce the number of problems that the police would have when it comes to stopping black people, especially shooting them.
Let me get back onto my chair and sit down. and let me ask Ali to respond to what you have presented to us today for consideration. Ali, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to have to say something to you and the gentleman that is on the phone. In order to answer your question, you're only going to have to go to what happened to Professor Gates. Do you remember that case where Obama called the cop and a stupid person? What happened to Obama and Professor Gay?
They
were humiliated. Humiliated. Yeah. Sitting down with this cop that you knew that he was racist. And they had to sit down as two black men to have a beer on national TV. That is my answer to your question. It doesn't matter what position you're in. The president of the United States was humiliated in front of everyone. And when you do the job for this system, like George Zimmerman did, with a man who the only thing that he has it's a Jewish last name, but he looks very Latino, like a Mexican. But he did the job as a vigilante of the law enforcement. What happened? He got out. So I don't care about these laws. Those laws, they don't even apply to the president of the United States as long as you are a person of color. That is one of the best cases that we could look at. You could put a black face as the attorney general of this country, write a report that doesn't really mean anything, and you could go on and on. I don't care how many laws are there. Look at the president we have now, grabbing woman pussy. And what? He's a white man. the laws, they don't apply to them. And that's my answer for your question today.
Okay.
The dynamic, we never going to change.
Thank you, Ali, and thank you, Joe. From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air. What are your thoughts about how do we situate ourselves in terms of understanding or trying to get a clearer understanding about this institution called law enforcement, so as to know how best to situate ourselves to deal with it?
Well, greetings to you, Therese, and also the PRN family. Glad
Thank
to hear
you.
That you're okay. In understanding to how to deal with law enforcement, you have to understand what type of powers do they have. I forgot the name of the gentleman who was on previously before me, but
Joe.
I kind of disagree with them in regards to enforcing the laws, because the laws right now are in the books to protect these policemen. I remember sitting in on the Jason Van Dyke hearing when his attorneys were trying to dismiss the case. And his lawyer basically had a good argument about a law in Illinois where basically all a policeman has to say is, my life is being threatened. And they can just shoot anybody and kill anybody. So the laws are being enforced, but the thing is that who are they applying to? And my thing is, I mean, the laws have to be very specific in order for justice to be served. So the understanding that the laws on the book needs to be enforced, I think we have to rethink that. Rethink that type of mentality, because, the police are being protected by the laws. This is why the policemen are basically getting off on killing black and brown people in this country.
So are you giving us any tools to work with?
Well, I will say this. One of the institutions we have to target in regards to this is the police unions. They are the biggest, they're the power behind a lot of these cases being, dismissed or thrown out. So we have to target them in order to get some sort of action and result. Now, I know the gentleman, Joel, also mentioned about elected civil board review boards, which they're trying to do here in Chicago, but that's not getting much traction at all, because obviously, elected officials don't want citizens to, bring police to prosecution level. So I doubt if that works even on a national level. It's not going to work here in Chicago. But also, too, we also have to focus on our future. Now, one of the things that is being done here in Chicago, and it's causing a major uproar here, is you're familiar with the John Birch case here in Chicago, right?
Yes, a little bit.
Okay, so just for context, it's one of the biggest prosecuted police corruption cases in Chicago history. So basically, there was a lot of torture going on in 20 years for a commander who was basically torturing predominantly black and Latino people in Chicago.
Taking them to empty warehouses and doing all kinds of crazy things to them.
Yes. Well, there was a settlement that happened last year. And what they're also doing is they're putting this curriculum in the schools where eighth graders and high schoolers are going to learn about this case. Well, apparently, there's a community here in Chicago, predominantly white community, who is in an uproar about this because there's policemen that live in this neighborhood. And they don't like the fact that, you know, hey, why are you putting this in our school books? Because they're giving cops a bad name. But the thing is that this is the truth. So we have to educate our children to let them know that if nothing changes, they're going to have to know about this stuff.
Well, you know, coming to the end of the program today, we have tomorrow, Free Your Mind Friday, to continue the conversation. But I have mixed feelings about just battering our children with certain kinds of information that, though intended to educate them, might also inculcate in them a permanent sense or feeling of fear. And we got to watch how we do this. Because in the end, it continues in an extreme way to teach people about the lopsided relationship in the power structure that we have. A police officer is infinitely more important and powerful than you and I. And we shouldn't internalize that. You see what I'm saying? So our education has to stress the equality, the presumed equality that we have as fellow citizens. A police officer should have no more power, no more importance than I or you. But actually, he or she does. So we have to look at systems and how they impact on how we are thinking. And because how we are thinking in turn impacts on what we are doing. Listen, you folks are just too bright for me. I'm going to have to take some smart pills overnight and come back to you tomorrow. And I hope you return as well, and others as well we haven't heard from. Do tune in and make this a really good part of our peer education program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. We see each other tomorrow. Thanks. Bye-bye.